Chapter 1, The Count of Monte Cristo. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, my name is Larissa Biggers from North Carolina Reading Service. I'll be reading Chapter 1 from Chapter 1 of The Count of Monte Cristo for Harrison 2. The translation is by Robin Boos, and the novel is written by Alexander Dumas. Chapter 1, Marseille, Arrival. On February 24, 1815, the lookout in Notre Dame de la Garde signaled the arrival of the three major ferons coming from Smyrna, Trieste, and Naples. As usual, a coastal pilot immediately left the port, sailed hard by the Chateau d'If, and boarded the ship between the Cap de Morgueux and the island of Rieux. At once, as was also customary, the terrace at Fort St. Jean was thronged with onlookers, because the arrival of a ship always was a great event in Marseille, particularly when the vessel, like the Pharaon, has been built, fitted out, and laded in the shipyards of the old port and belongs to an owner from the town. Meanwhile, the ship was drawing near and had successfully negotiated narrows created by some volcanic upheaval between the islands of Cal, Seren, and Jarre. It had rounded the Pomègue and was proceeding under its three topsails, its outer jib, and its spanker, but so slowly and with such melancholy progress that bystanders, instinctively sensing some misfortune, wondered what accident could have occurred on board. Nevertheless, those who were experts in nautical matters acknowledged that, if there had been such an accident, it would not have affected the vessel itself, for its progress gave every indication of a ship under perfect control. The anchor was ready to drop, and the bowsprit shrouds loosened. Next to the pilot, who was preparing to guide the Pharaon through the narrow entrance to the port of Marseille, stood a young man, alert and sharp-eyed, supervising every movement of the ship and repeating each of its pilot's commands. One of the spectators on the terrace of Fort St. Jean had been particularly affected by the vague sense of unease that hovered among them, so much so that he could not wait for the vessel to come to land. He leapt into a small boat and ordered it to be rowed out to the Pharaon, coming alongside opposite the cove of La Réserve. When he saw the man approaching, the young sailor left his place beside the pilot, hat in hand, came and leaned on the bulwarks of the ship. He was a young man of between 18 and 20, tall, slim, with fine dark eyes and ebony black hair. His whole demeanor possessed the calm and resolve particular to men who have been accustomed from childhood to wrestle with danger. "Ah, it's you, Dantès," the man on the boat cried. "What has happened, and why is there this air of dejection about all on board?" "A great misfortune, Monsieur Morrel," the young man replied. "A great misfortune, especially for me. While off Civita Vecchia, we lost our good captain, Captain Leclerc." "And the cargo?" the ship owner asked brusquely. "It has come safe to port, Monsieur Morrel, and I think you will be content on that score. But poor Captain Leclerc." "What happened to him, then?" the ship owner asked, visibly relieved. "So what happened to the good captain?" "He is dead." "Lost overboard?" "No, monsieur, he died of an apoplectic fever, in terrible agony." And then turning back to his crew, he said, "Look lively there, every man to his station to drop anchor." The crew obeyed. As one man, the 8 or 10 sailors of which it was composed leapt, some to the sheets, others to the braces, others to the halyards, others to the jib, and still others to the brails. The young sailor glanced casually at the start of this operation, and seeing that his orders were being carried out, prepared to resume the conversation. "But how did this misfortune occur?" the ship owner continued, picking it up where the young man had left off. "By heaven, monsieur, in the most unexpected way imaginable. After a long conversation with the commander of the port, Captain Leclerc left Naples in a state of great agitation. 24 hours later, he was seized with a fever. 3 days after that, he was dead. We gave him the customary funeral, and he now rests decently wrapped in a hammock with a 36-pound cannonball at his feet and another at his head off the island of Gigolo. We brought his medal and his sword back for his widow. Much good it did him, the young man continued with a melancholy smile, to fight the war against the English for 10 years, only to die at last like anyone else, in his bed. "Damn it, Monsieur Edmond, what do you expect?" asked the shipowner, who appeared to be finding more and more to console him in grief. "We are all mortal. The old must give way to the young, or else there would be no progress or promotion. As long as you can assure me that the cargo—" "All is well with it, Monsieur Morel, I guarantee you. If you take my advice, you will not discover this trip. You will not discount this trip for a profit of 25,000 francs. Then, as they had just sailed past the round tunnel, the young sailor cried, "Furl the topmast sails, the jib and the spanker, look lively!" The order was obeyed with almost as much dispatch as on a man-o'-war. "Let's go and brail all!" At this last command, all the sails were lowered, and the progress of the ship became almost imperceptible, driven only by the impetus of its forward motion. "And now, if you would like to come aboard, Monsieur Morel," Dante said, observing the owner's impatience, "I see your supercargo. Monsieur Dangler, coming out of his cabin, he will give you all the information that you desire. And as for me, I must see to the mooring and put the ship in mooring." The owner did not need asking twice. He grasped hold of a line that Dantes threw out to him, and with an agility that would have done credit to a seaman, climbed the rungs nailed to the bulging side of the ship, while Dantes went with his back post and left the conversation to the man he had introduced as Danglars. The latter was indeed emerging from his cabin and coming across to the shipowner. This new arrival was a man, 25 to 26 years old, somewhat somber in appearance, obsequious toward his superiors and insolvent to his subordinates. Hence, even apart from the label of supercargo, which always in itself causes aversion among sailors, he was generally as much disliked by the crew as Dantes was loved by them. "Well, Monsieur Morel," said Danglars, "you have heard the bad news, I suppose." "Yes, yes, poor Captain Leclerc. He was a fine and upright man, and above all, an excellent sailor, weathered between the sea and the heavens, as was proper in a man responsible for looking after the interests of so important a firm as Morel and Son," Danglars replied. "Even so," the shipowner replied, watching Dantes while he searched for his mooring, "even so, I think one need not be a seaman of such long experience as you say, Danglars, to know the business. There is our friend Edmund, going about his. He seems to me like a man who has no need to ask advice of anybody." "Indeed," said Danglars, casting a sidelong glance at Dantes with a flash of hatred in his eyes. "Yes, indeed. He is young and full of self-confidence. The captain was hardly dead before he had taken command without asking anyone, and made us lose a day and a half on the island of Elba, instead of returning directly to Marseille." "As far as taking command of the ship is concerned," said the owner, "that was his duty as first mate. And as for losing a day and a half at Elba, he was in the wrong, unless there was some damage to the ship that needed repairing. The ship was in as good a shape as I am, and as good as I hope you are, Monsieur Morel. That day and a half was lost on a whim for nothing other than the pleasure of going ashore. Dantes," the owner said, turning toward the young man, "would you come here?" "Your pardon, Monsieur," Dantes said. "I shall be with you in an instant." And then to the crew he said, "Drop anchor." The anchor was immediately lowered, and the chain ran out noisily. Dantes stayed at his post, even though the pilot was there, until the last operation had been carried out, and then ordered, "Lower the pennant and the flag to half-mast. Unbrace the yards." "You see," Dangler said, "I do believe he thinks himself captain already." "So he is, in effect," said the owner. "Yes, apart from your signature and that of your partner, Monsieur Morel." "By gad, why shouldn't we leave him in the job?" said the owner. "He is young, I grant you, but he seems to be made for it and very experienced in his work." A cloud passed across Dangler's brow. "Excuse me, Monsieur Morel," Dante said as he came over. "Now that the ship is moored, I am entirely at your disposal. I think you called for me?" Dangler's took a step back. "I wanted to ask why you stopped on the island of Elba." "I don't know, Monsieur. It was to carry out a last order from Captain Leclerc, who gave me, on his deathbed, a packet for Marshal Bertrand." "Did you see him, Edmund?" "Whom?" "The Grand Marshal." "Yes." Morrel looked about him and drew Dantès aside. "And how is the Emperor?" he asked earnestly. "He is well, as far as I can judge by my own eyes." "So you saw the Emperor, too, did you? He came to visit the Marshal while I was there." "And did you speak to him?" "It was he, monsieur, who spoke to me," Dantès said, smiling. "What did he say?" "He asked me about the ship, the time for the departure of Marseille, the route it had taken, and the cargo we were carrying. I think that, had it been empty, and I the master of it, he intended to buy it, but I told him that I was only the first mate, and that this ship belonged to the firm of Morrel and Son." "Ah, yes," he said, "I know them. The Morrels have been shipowners from father to son, and there was Morrel who served in the same regiment as I did when I was garrisoned at Valence." "By heavens, that's a fact," the shipowner cried with delight. "It was Policard Morrel, my uncle, who later made captain. Dantès, tell my uncle that the Emperor remembered him, and you will bring tears to the old trooper's eyes. Come, come now," he went on, putting a friendly arm across the young man's shoulders. "You did well to follow Captain Leclerc's instructions and to stop on Elba, even though, if it were known that you gave a packet to the Marshal and spoke to the Emperor, you might be compromised." "How could it compromise me, monsieur? I don't even know what I was carrying, and the Emperor only asked me the same questions that he would have put to anyone else. But please excuse me," he continued. "The health authorities and the customs are coming on board. With your permission?" Of course, my dear Dantès, carry on." The young man went off, and as he did, Danglars returned. "So," he asked, "it appears that he gave you a good reason for stopping off at Porta Ferrara?" "Excellent reason, dear Danglars." "I am pleased to hear it," the other replied. "It is always distressing to see a comrade fail in his duty." "Dantès did his duty," the shipowner answered, "and there is no more to be said. It was Captain Leclerc who ordered him to put it into port." "Speaking of Captain Leclerc, did he not give you a letter from him?" "Who?" "Dantès. Not to me. Was there ever one?" "I believe that, apart from the packet, Captain Leclerc entrusted him with a letter." "Which packet are you referring to, Danglars?" The same that Dante delivered when we stopped at Porto Ferrara." "And how did you not know that he had? And how did you know that he had a packet to deliver at Porto Ferrara?" Danglars blushed. "I was passing by the door of the captain's cabin, which was partly open, and I saw him handing a packet and a letter to Dantès." "He did not mention it," said the owner. "But if he had such a letter, he will give it to me." Danglars thought a moment. "In that case, Monsieur Morrel, I beg you to say nothing about it to Dantès. I must have been mistaken." At that moment, the young man came back, and Danglars left them. "Now, my dear Dantès, are you free?" the owner said. "Yes, monsieur." "It did not take long." "No. I gave customs a list of our cargo. As to the port authorities, they sent a man with a coastal pilot, and I handed over our papers to him." "So you have nothing more to do here?" Dantès cast a rapid glance about him. "No. Everything's in order," he said. "Then you can come and take dinner with us." "Please, Monsieur Morrel, I beg you to excuse me, but the first thing I must do is visit my father. Nonetheless, I am most grateful for the honor you do me." "That's proper, Dantès, very proper. I know you are a good son." "And," Dantès asked, somewhat hesitantly, "as far as you know, he's in good health, my father?" "I do believe so, dear Edmund, although I have not seen him." "Yes, he stays shut up in his little room, which at least proves that he lacked nothing while you were away." Dantès smiled. "My father is a proud man, monsieur, and even if he were short of everything, I doubt he would have asked for help from anyone in the world, except God. Now, when you have done that, we can count on your company. I must beg you once more to excuse me, Monsieur Morrel, but after that first visit, there's another that is no less important to me." "Ah, Dantès, that's true. I was forgetting there is someone in La Catalane who must be expecting you with no less impatience than your father, the lovely Mercedes." Dantès smiled. "Ah, yes," said the owner. "I now understand why she came 3 times to ask for the news of the Pharaon. Dash it, Edmund, you're a lucky fellow to have such a pretty mistress." "Well, she's not my mistress, monsieur," the young sailor said gravely. "She's my fiancée." "It sometimes amounts to the same thing," the owner said with a chuckle. "Not for us, monsieur," Dante replied. "Come, come, my dear Edmund," the other continued. "Don't let me detain you. You've looked after my business well enough for me to give you every opportunity to look after your own. Do you need any money?" "No, monsieur. I have my salary from the trip. That is, nearly 3 months' pay." "You manage your affairs well, boy. You might add that my father is a poor man, Monsieur Morrel." "Yes, indeed. I know you are a good son to him. Go and see your father. I too have a son, and I should bear a grudge against the man who kept him away from me after a 3-month voyage. May I take my leave then, sir? The young man said with a bow. Yes, you have nothing more, if you have nothing more to say to me. No. When Captain Leclerc was dying, did he not give you a letter for me? It would have been impossible for him to write one, monsieur. But that reminds me, I wanted to ask you for a fortnight's leave. To get married? Firstly, then to go to Paris. Very well. Have as much time as you want, Dantès. It will take us a good 6 weeks to unload this vessel, and we should hardly be ready to put it to sea again within 3 months. In 3 months' time, however, you must be there. The Pharaon, the ship owner continues, putting a hand across the young sailor's shoulders, cannot set sail without its captain. Without its captain, Dantès replied, his eyes lighting up with joy. Be very careful what you are saying, monsieur, because you have just touched on the most secret of my heart's desires. Can it be that you intend to appoint me captain of the Pharaon? If it was up to me alone, I should grasp your hand, my dear Dantès, and say to you, the matter is settled. But I have a partner, and you know the Italian proverbs. But at least, we are halfway there, since you already have one of the two votes you need. Let me go to get you the other, and I shall do my best. Oh, Monsieur Morrel, the young sailor cried with tears in his eyes, grasping the shipowner's hands. Monsieur Morrel, I thank you on behalf of my father and of Mercedes. Fine, fine, Edmund. There is a God in heaven who looks after honest folk. Go and see your father, and go and see Mercedes, then that's done. Come and see me. When that's done, come and see me. But don't you want me to accompany you back to land? No, thank you. I shall stay here to settle my accounts with Danglars. Were you happy with him during the voyage? It depends on what you understand by that question, monsieur. If you mean as a good companion, no, because I think he is not like me since the day I have had when I had the folly, after a trifling dispute with us, to suggest that we should stop for 10 minutes on the Isle of Monte Cristo to settle the matter. It was wrong of me to propose that, and he was right to refuse. If you are asking about him as a supercargo, I think there is nothing to say, and that you will be satisfied with the matter in which his duties have been carried out. Come now, Dantès, the shipowner asked. If you were a captain of the Pharaon, would you be pleased to keep Danglars? Whether as captain or first mate, Monsieur Morrel, Dantès replied, I shall always have the highest respect for those who enjoy the confidence of my owners. Well, well, Dantès, you're clearly a fine lad in every respect. Let me detain you no longer, for I can see that you are on tender hooks. I may take my leave? Asked Dantès. Go on, I'm telling you. Will you permit me to use your boat? Take it. Au revoir, Monsieur Morrel, and thank you 1,000 times. Au revoir, dear Edmund, and good luck. The young sailor leapt into the boat, seated himself in the stern, and gave the order to row across to the Cambière. Two sailors immediately bent over the oars, and the vessel proceeded as fast as it could among the thousands of small boats that obstruct the sort of narrow alleyway leading between the two lines of ships from the harbor entrance to the Quai d'Orléans. The shipowner looked after him, smiling, until the boat touched land, and he saw him leap out onto the cobbled quay, where he was instantly lost in the crowd that, from 5 a.m. until 9 p.m, throngs the famous street known as La Cambière. The modern inhabitants of this old Phoenician colony are so proud that they proclaim, with all the seriousness in the world, in the accent which gives such savor to everything they say, if Paris had the Cambère, Paris would be a little Marseille. Turning, the shipowner saw Danglars standing behind him, apparently waiting orders, but in reality, like him, watching the young sailor's departure. Yet, there were very different expressions on these two pairs of eyes following the one man. We'll stop here for this installation of The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexandre Dumas, translated by Robin Buss. We'll pick it up right where we left off in the next episode. My name is Larissa Biggers from North Carolina Reading Service, providing news and information for individuals who are blind or print impaired. Our website is ncreadingservice.org. If you have questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.